Good afternoon. All right, we'd like to now call the September 12th regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Commission meeting to order. If I can get everybody to take your seats, settle your conversations, that would be greatly appreciated. All right, we'll pause for a moment for invocation, and then we'll immediately go into the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Welch, please.
Please stand. Heavenly Father, thank you for this beautiful day in Savannah. We appreciate your gracing us with beautiful weather and protecting us from storms of past. Ask you to help us all make the right decisions for the betterment of our community and guide us in doing so. Bless the families of 9/11 who lost loved ones, and protect those who serve our great nation to protect us of our liberties and our freedom. Amen.
For the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follows. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, there are notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by the regular business, old business, and then adjournment. For each agenda item on the regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioner should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of no more than 20 minutes. The board then asks questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will be open for the public comment. If you wish to comment on the item that the board is considering at that time, members of the public that are in person must fill out a speaker card and give it to staff. Let me reiterate, if you wish to comment on any of the items, please make sure that you fill out a speaker card and hand it to staff prior to that item being considered. If you are participating virtually, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you'll be recognized and the staff will unmute your microphone. And we also ask that you unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use the raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item if you want to speak on a petition. Once the floor is closed for public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain you want to speak, still use the raise your hand feature or submit your speaker card, and you will have the option to decline when your name is called. After the public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take action. Just basic housekeeping. If you all would double check your cell phones to make sure that they are silenced or on vibrate. If you, additionally, if you have a conversation that you would like to have amongst yourselves, please do everybody a solid and step out into the hallway to do that so we can make sure that everybody can hear the proceedings of today and make sure that everything is properly recorded for the record. So there's an accurate representation of what has occurred. All right. Thank you. So we move into the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
Cole, so moved.
No, a second.
We'll take a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion is carried and the agenda is approved. Now we move on to notices and proclamations. And there are a couple. Number one, we held a personnel committee meeting today at 11 in the Jerry Serency conference room here at 112 East State Street. There were no noteworthy occurrences. No actions were taken. What's that? Oh, okay. Excuse, my apologies. Let me look at it. So in there, there was revisions to the process for reimbursement and relocation expenses. And that has been reviewed and no issue was taken with the executive committee. So that change has been implemented. Ms. Wilson, yes, sir.
That's correct. I basically was going to say that the committee met and voted on supporting the changes with regards to relocation expenses, as well as in reimbursement, as well as memos and last day of employment criteria.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So that brings us to the next item. That is, we also had a finance committee meeting at 11:30 a.m., in the Jerry Cerency conference room here at 112 East State. And Ms. Epstein, would you like to report out?
I'm Elizabeth Epstein. In the finance meeting today, we discussed where we were with our budgets and expenditures for the year. Everything is tracking, but there were no exceptions or anything unusual that we weren't expecting. So we approved that report today.
Thank you, Ms. Epstein. Okay. That brings us to the next item on the agenda, and those are the items requested to be removed from the final agenda. I'll read those items for the record. The zoning map amendment of 100 Little Neck Road, it's a mixed-use plan development. Next item is a short-term vacation rental overlay district map, petition number 23-004258-ZA-text at 501 East Bay Street. Next item is Oakwood at New Hampstead, major subdivision. That petition number is 23-003685-sub-P. Next item is a map amendment. 9 parcels on East Broad Street, Gwinnett Street, and East Bolton. Petition number 23-001408-ZA. And that concludes the items requested to be removed from the final agenda.
Cole's motion to remove items 3 through 6.
Noah's second.
All right, thank you. Motion was made by Mr. Cole's and seconded by Mr. Noah to remove the items requested from the, remove the item from the final agenda as requested. If there's no discussion on that motion, we'll entertain a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you. Move to the next item. I'll do it in a second. We'll move to the next item on the agenda, and that's items to be requested to be withdrawn. There are none listed. Now we'll move into the consent agenda. A consent agenda consists of items of which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation and for which no known objections have been identified nor anticipated by staff. Any objections raised at the meeting will result in an item being moved to the regular agenda. Okay, I'll read those items for the record. The first item is approval of the July 25th, 2023 meeting minutes. The next item is Sweetwater Station, major subdivision, petition number 23-003679-sub-P. Next item is Edgewater Phase 1A, New Hampstead, major subdivision, petition number 23-003657-sub-P. The next item is Cobblestone Phase 2, major subdivision, and that petition number is 23-002429-sub-P. If there is no concerns, we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Cole, so moved.
Noah, second.
If there's no discussion on this, on the motion made by Mr. Coles and seconded by Mr. Noah, I would entertain a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No? Okay. Motion carries and the petition is approved. For those of you who are here on behalf of any of the items that were listed on the consent agenda or items requested to be removed from the final agenda, as you heard, those items have been removed and or approved based off of them being on the consent agenda, and you are free to stay or go at your leisure because that item is no longer being heard.
Did that include item 4?
Yes, ma'am.
I have a statement from Alderman Dietrich Leggett.
You have a statement from Alderman Dietrich Leggett?
Correct.
If you would, we'll have to have you approach the bench. I'll allow for it. The approach and.
Thank you. I'm sorry. So I was having difficulty hearing and keeping up.
So you said that you are.
I'm representing Dietrich Leggett as with his message because I work with him and I get to speak for him.
In
I
what,
have a button that says that.
I was about to say, in what capacity, if I may?
Well, I'm a pro bono executive that does his scrub work, kind of. And I do a lot of his external communications I send out for him and such. And he's available to send it in by writing after this meeting, depending on his request here.
I actually would have preferred that we receive that prior to this meeting. It would just have seemed to be in more decency in order for us to know that he would have a representative, because anybody from the public could say, I'm here with, you know, speaking on behalf of Dietrich Leggett. And that really does not at this point sit well with me.
And I'm really sorry because I'm 80 and have an unconscionable amount of doctor's appointments all the time.
Understood.
And he works in the daytime.
Understood.
So that's why I got to speak on this and I'll speak for myself on it if you like.
So let me do this. Let me do this. Hold on. I got it. Since we're already not hearing it, I would rather that the information be held until the date that we hear it. Therefore, if you would take this back to Alderman Leggett.
Okay.
Have him, if he cannot attend himself, have him submit
designated.
An email or something like that notifying us that he will be sending representation so that we can vet the information.
Yes.
And therefore hear the information along with the information, the petition that you guys wish to speak on.
Okay.
So that there is no lapse or gap in the information, so that when the decision is being made, it's well informed and we can go from there. I appreciate you coming forward to participate.
Yes.
However,
well, it just came to my attention recently. No. So.
Well, we appreciate you coming to participate, but in the sake of decency and order, fairness across the board,
you'll have it tonight.
Thank you.
You'll have it tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a clarifying question?
Yes, sir.
This in order.
That
she referenced number 4 on the consent agenda, which from my agenda is the approval of the minutes.
You got to refresh. Did you refresh on the screen? Refresh on the screen.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just want to make it clear to the people that might be here that the short-term vacation rental overlay, that was continued until October the 17th. So I wanted to give you a date that item was continued to, so that you know that there's a date certain.
Okay.
Thank you.
Please make note accordingly. And if you're here for a short-term rental, October 17th is your target date as of right now. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll move into our regular agenda. No, excuse me. I skipped one. The next item on the agenda was old business. There's none listed. So that brings us to our regular agenda. And the first item on that in our regular agenda is the amendment to an approved general development master plan. Petition number 23-07657-site at 703 Louisville Road. Mr. Morrow.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the board, Edward Morrow, Development Services, staff here at the MPC. So the present request before you is coming up again. It's a request on behalf of Brad Grant and SCAD for the purpose of amending an approved general development master plan for the site at 703 Lowell Road. The revised plan would allow the construction of 220 student housing units on the subject property, and it would preserve the unlisted historic freight depot headhouse, which was built by the Seaboard Railroad Company in 1929. The subject parcel was rezoned in 2019. At that time, staff suggested that it be approved under the unusual and extraordinary conditions provision of the ordinance, which in essence required that a general development plan be brought before and approved by this commission so as to have some assurances as to the nature of development that would occur on the site. And so this is the circumstance that brings us here today. There is an approved general development master plan, and the petitioner is requesting to amend that plan. What you see on your screen right now are the conditions that were originally placed by the Savannah City Council back at that time in 2019. There were six conditions. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop bouncing them around for you in just a second. Okay. There was a required unit mix, which said that there would be 26 three-bedroom units, 102 two-bedroom units, and 76 one-bedroom units, as well as 51 studios. There was a green space requirement of 20%. The developer at that time was required to meet the stormwater and flood protection requirements. Elevations and renderings were supposed to be provided, repurposing of historic materials and documentation of the historic structures in accordance with the MPC's policy at that time. So these are conditions to the zoning that were placed on this site at the time. Right now, the only thing that would be permissible in order for a developer to achieve or receive building permits would be to request building of this specific thing as the City Council placed these requirements. And so today, SCAD has brought back a revised general development plan that is more or less consistent with the proposal that is in place. However, it is geared towards student housing. And so the petitioner is proposing to place 220 units across two buildings in a slightly different configuration. There would be approximately 110 units in one building and 110 in another. With a mixture of two-bedroom suites, two-bedroom apartments, four-bedroom apartments, and studio units. Each building would feature its own above-ground parking. And the proposed site plan would also preserve the historic headhouse on the site, but they would be required to move it in accordance with the previously placed conditions that were put by the City Council. The site is about 2.56 acres. And surrounding, it already has DX zoning. Again, this is more or less consistent with what's already there. And this would close what is currently kind of a small gap between existing SCAD housing developments that are already surrounding. I'm going to move down. Community outreach, again, just to note, as of our last meeting, SCAD did reach out to a couple of community organizations in an effort to kind of broach the subject of the proposed development. Those are identified in the staff report. With regard to impact and suitability, the proposal is geared toward student housing. So there's a multiplicity of travel modes that are anticipated. There is above ground parking offsite. There are connections for moped and other small motorized vehicles, as well as pedestrian connections. The developer is requesting to take advantage of some of the parking reductions because they're in the parking reduction area, and they have further reduced that through the option to provide more motorcycle and moped spaces. The one difference between the last time that you saw this site plan is that the petitioner removed some on-street parking spaces in favor of changing these so that the buses that would pick up SCAD students from these residences, they could pull along the curb and not have to come interior to the site. And so the site plan that was uploaded to the agenda shows this updated version of the site plan. That was the one significant change. Again, what you're seeing on your screen right now is actually a walk score that was developed in accordance with the initial petition to show that this particular site is very centrally located. Again, SCAD intends to maintain the existing pedestrian connections and even to enhance those. The site will be served by the city's water and sewer departments. There's sufficient capacity for it. And as of March 2019, the city council amended the future land use map to bring it into conformance with the request. With regard to policy analysis on the request, it is, again, more or less consistent with the existing development pattern, and it is probably a better fit for the site than the current approved general development master plan, simply because SCAD already has housing developments that are to the north and the south of the site, and so this would sort of support closing a small loop that exists. It might also give them some encouragement and opportunity to strengthen their pedestrian connections between what's happening at the Hive and to the south. Also, just in this area, there's also several large footprint institutional uses. So again, this particular site or proposal, there are two large footprint buildings. It's consistent with what's already happening. So. With that, staff recommends approval of the proposed general development master plan, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Any questions for staff? Okay. We'll now hear from the petitioner.
Oh, you had a presentation, sorry. Where is it? Oh, you know where it is? Okay.
There you go. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. For the record, Josh Yellen here today representing the Savannah College of Art and Design for this amended general development plan. I know that you all have seen this petition previously. We did want to come back to reiterate some of the changes that have been made, but also to address some of the concerns that were brought up when we were here about 2 months ago. And some of the concerns that we heard were about changes to the site, but we view all of the changes as an improvement from what is currently approved and can be built by right. We are reducing the height of the building. We are adding additional green space. We are adding the SCAD infrastructure to the site, and we are decreasing the number of units. And so from all of the concerns that we heard, we view this project as a vast improvement to what could be built by right. And we agree with staff both in the prior recommendation and today that this general development plan amendment should be approved. I do want to clarify some of the misconceptions that we heard about the site as it related primarily to pedestrian access. And what everyone can see on your screen is the proposed Canal City Walk on the south side of the Springfield Canal, along with the existing sidewalks that there are in place. I know that we saw some renderings from prior developers. Those were very pretty. Those were very untruthful. The canal pedestrian access is proposed to be on the south side and has never been proposed to be on this property. As we go through the site, and we have to go back in history some of y'all were on the board, some of you were not. In 2016, a site-specific development was approved for this site. And I've highlighted the area that you can see adjacent to the canal. This is a gravel maintenance and access road for use by the city of Savannah, similar to what you see adjacent to the Bilbo Canal. This is for maintenance workers to get to the canal. You can see it does not transcend the entire length of the site. It doesn't even really connect to the parking area of the site, but this was not pedestrian access. Oops, sorry. As we move forward to 2019 and early 2020, again, this site was approved by MPC and went to city council as part of a site plan specific rezoning. This was the actual plan that was approved, and here is the quote-unquote access that was shown. Again, does not connect to any trail network. It is shown as emergency vehicle and maintenance access, and this up here at the entrance to it is a service court where the dumpsters were going to be located. There is no area on this plan that was proposed for pedestrian access, and you can see that it even abuts the canal bank. And that will be important later on, that this property directly abuts the bank of the Springfield Canal. This plan came back before the same board in 2020 for for, again, an amended master plan. It was approved 9-0, and it was approved by this board, again, without pedestrian access. What we're coming back for you today is to improve upon the plan, but still keeping some of the aspects of the plan that are beneficial to the city of Savannah, that are beneficial to the community, that are beneficial to the Canal District. And one of the unique features of this site, which we didn't have time to discuss last time, is that in 2018, and part of the reason the access is set up the way that it is, in 2018, the city of Savannah and the prior developer signed a development agreement specifically for this site. At that time, the access was moved to the south side for the canal plan. And in return, this developer and SCAD as successor in interest, if this plan goes forward, committed to spend at least $1.5 million to reinforce the canal banks. The city of Savannah determined that this was one of the key benefits, was to partner with a developer who could spend the money to make the infrastructure improvements to the Springfield Canal in a more efficient and better manner than the city of Savannah could. So we are committed to that $1.5 million investment that needs to be built to city of Savannah specifications. And upon completion, we have to dedicate that back to the city of Savannah. And so we are still prepared to move forward with that development agreement. And it's always been the intent of the canal plan that the pedestrian access would be provided on city of Savannah right of way. And I know we talk about the site, it helps to see the site. Here is the Louisville or Louisville Road property. This is also SCAD property on this side where you can see a very wide city of Savannah right of way. There is no right of way on the other side of the canal. As we move forward to a street view, which is perhaps more beneficial to see, this is the existing sidewalks that are in place, which could simply curve and go to where the city of Savannah is proposing to put the canal improvements. This heavily wooded area is actually the Louisville Road site, which was never intended for the access. We have the perfect spot for the canal connectivity immediately adjacent and across the canal from the site. SCAD is committed and is committed to ensuring that that benefit will occur for the SCAD residents, for the city of Savannah, and for the Canal District as a whole on the south side of Louisville Road. In addition to these improvements that we can make, improvements from the current improved plan to what we're proposing now, we also get the benefit of the SCAD bus system. And I know we talked about how this might be a change from multifamily to student housing. I think we all in this room could say pretty safely that that multifamily housing was going to be student housing. Now, by bringing it into the SCAD envelope, we can bring the bus infrastructure and the SCAD resources to this site. As you can see on Louisville Road, there is an existing bus line that already covers this area. I've circled where we're located. We are making the amendments to the plan today so that we can go ahead and add this bus pickup, as was discussed in the prior meeting, right off of Louisville Road. The prior plan, which again we're trying to improve upon, had 5 parallel parking spaces on the west side of the site, 5 parallel parking spaces on the east side of the site. We heard concerns about how would that impact traffic, are cars gonna be able to pull in and out. We've redesigned it to eliminate the on-street parking and to put the 2 bus parking and loading areas immediately adjacent to Louisville Road. We've already had discussions. I know there was a comment made in the pre-meeting. We will 100% have staff to coordinate that bus pickup to ensure that there are only 2 buses in that site. We are not going to have buses queued up behind it. We're not going to have any stacking. We know that there's right-of-way improvements coming to this area, but we don't want to cause any problems, particularly with our students who are trying to get to class in a timely manner. We want it to be as efficient and as smooth as possible. And so we've made these changes based upon some of the comments and concerns that we heard last time. Additionally, some of the items that we would like to address, which maybe were brushed aside from the prior hearing, is the actual condition of the site. And so we've already discussed the $1.5 million investment that SCAD will be making to improve the canal. Additionally, it needs to be said that this site is heavily contaminated. It is going to cost at least $2.8 million in environmental cleanup costs in order to get this site ready for students. So that's $2.8 million, $4.3 million, even prior to acquiring the property or building on site. the site is contaminated, and any other developer would simply put it in the brownfield program. They would take the tax abatement, brownfield it, do what they could in a different manner. We are committed to remediating the site, which is a vast benefit to the community. Additionally, and something that we often don't talk about in these hearings, is the benefit that is provided by actually having on-campus housing for students. And this goes both ways, both a benefit for SCAD and a benefit for the city of Savannah. What SCAD has seen and what many colleges and universities across the country have seen is that when students live on campus, when they live in supervised dormitories, their absenteeism goes down and the GPAs go up. SCAD is trying to encourage and trying to provide the space to have as many students as they want be able to live on campus. By putting this dorm here, we are not increasing the SCAD student body by the number of beds. We are trying to encourage the existing student body to come on campus. They get the benefit. The city of Savannah also gets the benefit of freeing up much needed multifamily rentals in the downtown area. If we can provide more housing on campus, there is less of a demand on our downtown area for student housing. And so again, for these benefits, because we are reducing the height, we are reducing the density of the site, we are increasing the infrastructure because we are committed to maintaining the connectivity that's always been proposed. This is a site that is an improvement to what someone could do by right. And so we do once again thank staff for not once but twice recommending approval for this amendment to a general development plan. And we respectfully request that you approve of the same. And I'm happy to answer any questions that y'all may have.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen. Any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Melder.
Thank you. Mr. Yellen, when you mentioned that SCAD would be willing to support the city with a walkway on the south bank of the Springfield Canal, can you provide some insight into what support means there?
Well, as you know, we have the existing development agreement that's in place. And I know that SCAD, based upon the proximity.
Well, there's a development agreement in place with the prior developer.
Correct. And so we have, and I'm going to the map now. We have existing SCAD housing here, SCAD housing here, SCAD housing here. We would like to work with the city of Savannah, obviously, to ensuring that the canal connectivity that is proposed, obviously, that it benefits the residents of this area, which we know are existing SCAD students. And so this is already city of Savannah right-of-way. We are not protesting any sort of improvements on that area, but whatever we can do to assist in the facilitation of that.
So the support there more than not protesting?
No, sir. I mean, once the plans become readily available from the city, I think we would like to have that dialogue with the city of Savannah as to this access, whether it's going to be sidewalks, whether it's bikes, whether it's running trails. We want to be a part. We already are a part of this Canal District community and would like to remain a part of it going forward.
Okay. Has the petitioner done any outreach to the Savannah Ogeechee Canal Society?
Yes, sir. There have been multiple phone calls and emails that have been made. They were still coordinating that. This process started even prior to the last meeting. I think there were some travel schedules and scheduling conflicts, but that outreach has been made and there was correspondence as well. Additionally, at prior meeting, we had reached out, and it's not included in this packet, but HSF, Historic Savannah Foundation, had written a letter of support for the project. There's been outreach to the Coastal Heritage Society, Savannah Ogeechee Canal, the Brickyard Neighborhood Association. There's conversations with both Alderwoman Lanier and Alderman Palumbo. As y'all recall, Alderman Palumbo was involved in saving this head house here 2019. And so we reached out to him as well. And there was also outreach to Dr. Grimm. And so there's been extensive outreach to this. And so far, outside of the two individuals who spoke at the last meeting, we haven't received any sort of criticism or negative comments on this petition.
Mm-hmm. And can you describe again the number of cars you anticipate will be parked in the area versus the number of cars you believe the development will generate?
Yes. And so from the prior development, they were proposing to have 290 units with 370 parking spaces. We've been able to reduce the unit count to 220 units, providing 161 parking spaces. We know that SCAD students are not your standard multifamily residents, and so we have the required amount of parking plus 130 bike spaces, 60 moped spaces, and the two off/on-street bus pull-ins. Mm-hmm. From the traffic engineering standpoint, the dormitory use itself generates far less traffic than multifamily. When you plug it into your calculators, the multifamily is looking at this as being a four-person family unit, you know, going to work, going to the grocery store, coming home, going out and back. Dormitories obviously don't have the same schedules, and that reduction in the traffic impact generated for dormitories additionally does not include existing bus systems that SCAD has. Mm-hmm. SCAD moves upwards of 50,000 people a day when they are in session. They move more people than CAT does on a daily basis. And so it is an efficient system, and it allows for the opportunities for us to take advantage of the scale and the infrastructure that's already in place to ensure that the traffic impact that we generate will be less than what a multifamily developer could do right now by right.
And this is 220 units.
Correct.
And this is a dorm, so I'm imagining a single bed.
It depends on
how many
layout.
Single beds.
It, 800 beds.
800 beds. How
yes,
many
sir.
Parking spots?
161 parking spaces, 130 bike spaces, 60 moped spaces, and two buses. This site is within the parking reduction area. And so the way the parking calculations work for this area is that you're not looking at the number of units, you look at the number of beds. And so the requirement under the city ordinance is one space per four beds. But because we're in the parking reduction area, which was approved as part of NUZO, that we don't want to encourage as much automobile traffic, there's a 50% reduction for the dormitories in this area. And that's pretty much across the board for any dormitory that's built within the downtown or Victorian districts, that 50% reduction applies. And so this site, as currently proposed, is more than adequately parked.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about the experience at the Hive? How many beds are at the Hive?
That is going to be a question that I unfortunately cannot remember. 2,032 beds.
How many parking spaces are at the Hive?
1,000. And I believe they have excess spaces there.
How much excess space?
More than one deck.
So I'm going off my mental math here, and work with me. So the Hive has 1,000 beds, no, 2,000 beds and 1,000 parking spots. The Gateway project will have 800 beds and 130 parking spots?
161.
161 parking
plus
spots.
Plus moped, plus bicycle.
Okay. Has SCAD done that parking analysis internally to understand that that's enough to be on site? If you've got one deck of the, how many parking spots does one deck equate?
Roughly 20%.
20%.
Yep.
So that's 250 parking spots that at the Hive go unparked every night?
Correct.
So if every bed, you've got a parking spot for half, and then a quarter goes, this is getting into math that I don't understand, but 3/8, I would imagine, is the number of parking spots to beds that works at the Hive.
And I believe from the parking calculations last time, it's roughly 20%. 20% of students have cars overall.
I think it's more probably illustrative to go off the Hive, considering if there are 2,000 beds there, a little over 1,000 parking spaces, and every night a quarter of those parking spaces go unparked.
Well, right? Correct. The Hive was approved under the old zoning ordinance, and this is under the new zoning ordinance. We think for both sites we are providing excess parking, but the difference in the math, it's not necessarily a straight line comparison because the parking requirements were different pre-2019 when the Hive was built.
I think what the community probably is looking for more than the math around parking is that because, and I don't disagree that with staff's projection that because of where this property is located, it makes a lot of sense for SCAD to be there, considering that it has SCAD housing to the south and SCAD housing to the north. What I think the community really is kind of interested in knowing is that SCAD has a plan for parking. And, you know, and that excess parking, you know, do we know that the 250 spots go unparked at the deck at Housing in the Hive because they're parking in other spaces downtown? Or do we know that that's just the need and SCAD will be able to accommodate all of the student and staff parking needs on site, versus that parking being more demand on street parking, adjacent to these properties?
Understood. And over here, at least, there is no on-street parking. And so if any of the residents would like to park in any of these facilities, pretty much in the entire area that is surrounding Lewisville and Boundary Street, there is no existing on-street parking. And so we know for certain that if kids are parking, they're parking in the SCAD-provided spaces. And for the most part, when given that opportunity, they are not looking to park in city spaces and pay the meters and then have to walk a long distance to where they're actually residing. And we have looked at this across the board for the pockets of what I would say are distinct SCAD campuses, and they are being adequately addressed through the parking sticker programs that are in place and ensuring that students are actually parking on site when they are paying for that.
Mm-hmm. And so the benefits to the taxpayers on this project, just to clarify, is at least $1.5 million in cost share with the city for the Springfield widening project?
So there's a few benefits there, and thank you for bringing that up.
I can list them out.
At least $1.5 million, not as a cost share, that SCAD on its own would be required to spend at least $1.5 million on improvements that the city would need to approve ahead of time. Upon completion, we would then dedicate those improvements to the city.
I would love for SCAD to do all of the canal widening along their property bank, but I don't know that that's exactly what the agreement says. But if that's what they're proposing now, that would be tremendous. The other benefit that you listed was that SCAD would be willing to support, and not just in the form of not protesting, a walkway on City of Savannah right of way on the south bank of the canal.
Correct. SCAD is actively involved in this area. We know that we want the connectivity. We want our students to be able to walk to the arena. We want the students to be able to walk to downtown. We know that already there exists the existing infrastructure and right of way to make that happen along the south side of the canal. And so we would like to be a participant in that project. And,
okay.
And then as far as the community benefits, there is also, and I will keep saying it, a $2.8 million environmental cleanup cost. This site is currently blighted. This site currently has pink tags on it from the City of Savannah because it's been condemned. SCAD will be preserving and restoring the head house, which was a main point of contention previously when this was going to be demolished. And so there are very unique benefits to this site, and it's a very unique site that SCAD is uniquely in a position to assist with.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen.
Ms. Jarrett, and then we'll have Mr. Welch.
All right. I have concerns about buses.
Yes,
I have concerns about buses and the parking, but you've said you're going to address that. I also have concerns about the buses and the road infrastructure. How much is it going to cost for the City of Savannah to repair the roads that get damaged by the buses, the roads and the inlets as they drive around the corners and their back wheels hit the inlets and break them?
And yes, ma'am. And my understanding of how this is operating currently is that we're not making any proposed increases to the existing bus service. As you can see from this map, this is the actual SCAD. You can track this in real time map for the existing bus routes and the locations of the buses. This is available for all of their students to use. So Lewisville Road is already utilized. I think the green and purple represent two different, the green line and the purple line. So it's existing two lines of SCAD bus traffic already going down Louisville Road. An important point to mention is that there's an existing turnaround here that is offsite on private property that does not impact any sort of three-point turn in the middle of what we know is a busy street. They have already negotiated to have this so there can be a facilitation of the traffic to turn around. This is in place already as of today in 2023 and is not contingent upon this development. But part of the reason for targeting the site in this location is because that infrastructure already exists. And so the buses are going down that area.
Okay.
But happy to coordinate. Obviously, we know the city is making right-of-way improvements, planning to make right-of-way improvements on Louisville Road, planning to increase that connectivity as it relates to Louisville and Boundary. We know that there's an impact there. We know there's changes coming there. And again, we think that we're in the best position to help facilitate that.
One more question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
How much property tax will the city lose by taking this off the rolls?
That I cannot compute for you. What I can tell you, however, is that brownfielding the site, the $2.8 million.
You've got $4.3 million coming to us. I'm just wondering how much we'll lose.
So for those who aren't familiar with the brownfield program, any other developer would enroll this site and get EPD protection and take it off the tax rolls for at least 10 years. That's just the logic of from a brownfield program. Yes. Additionally, as has been discussed previously, when Savannah College of Art and Design acquires the site, it is not tax exempt from day one. It only becomes tax exempt when it's put into service for the nonprofit use.
Understood. Thank
you. Not until students moving in.
Mr. Wells.
Mr. Yellen, I know you said 20% of students drive automobiles.
Yes, sir.
Do y'all have an electric vehicle charging port area?
That's a great question. Yes.
So that's becoming big with students, especially the agents.
Me
being in the market, knowing it's going that way, seriously. So that's something to consider in the future developments, too.
Yes, and I believe they are absolutely stating that there would
be. Is that going to be in a parking garage, or is that going to be outside facility?
In the garage.
Okay.
I've got two things. From the public outreach side of things, you said you did get a letter of support from HSF. From all other parties that you had conversation with, was it not a conclusive position, or it was just, hey, we had a conversation, notified them, and got no feedback? Because I see some names that I'm pretty certain gave feedback, and I just want to kind of see what that feedback looked like.
So I'm playing the middleman here.
Okay.
My understanding of the conversation is that there was nothing negative that came back, that this is a vast improvement to the site as it currently exists. This is not to say that there might not be negative feedback as it relates to SCAD or as it relates to any project in this area, but that over a condemned building that is not being put to public use and also over what has already been improved at the increased density without the SCAD oversight, my understanding is that this is an improvement.
Okay. And the second one is for the sake of consistency, because this was a concern and issue that I raised at the last meeting, and quite frankly was the reason why, as the tiebreaker on that, I made the decision that I made, is I specifically ask if any measures, if the lion's share of the students that are going to be at this facility are going to be walking, biking, mopeding versus driving, considering the amount of traffic that's already at this intersection, considering the number of blind spots that already exist at this intersection, what measures are being taken for the safety of the students' foot traffic, bicycle use, moped use? That is still a concern. I didn't say this in the last meeting. I have a heart for SCAD students because I am a SCAD alum.
Yes, sir.
So I genuinely, whether it was a SCAD student or not, but I have a specific heart for that. I have a genuine concern about the safety of the individuals that would be using this intersection on the bike and foot.
Yes, sir. And I believe, and I'm showing the image as the site currently exists, because there was some assumption that there were no existing sidewalks in the area. And I do just want to clarify that there are existing sidewalks and there is an existing crosswalk even at Louisville and Boundary. Part of, and I hear your concern about trying to get the students mobilized and moving safely from campus to campus and from building to building. A lot of it's the city of Savannah and the improvements that have been coordinated for Lewisville Road and Boundary. We would obviously 100% love to have a dedicated bike lane, would love to see the improvements made to that intersection. It's unfortunately out of our area to control that. But as has been stated, this is a general development plan. It's still going to go through the specific development plan process with the city of Savannah. When we have to meet with traffic engineering and go through that additional process. And if there's recommendations and improvements that we can do on our site to facilitate that safety measure, we're obviously committed to doing that, but we're confined by the corners of our property, but would obviously love to see those improvements when they come from the city of Savannah.
Okay. I have nothing further. Anything else for the petitioner? Ms. Bowles.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen, for your presentation. I think the concern that I had earlier, I think they may have, the concerns may have been met. With regard to the organizations that you met with, and I understand that you're saying that there were no known oppositions, but I think at the last meeting there were no known support letters either except for HSF. Would you say that, I know that because this is in the Canal District and part of the Canal District plan, it says that you do need to meet with the organizations, right? So I was looking to see if there was anything in terms of more information that you could give in terms of what you heard from those people that you met with. Did you hear nothing or?
Yes, I mean, I don't want to play middleman here, but from what I'm hearing, everything, there was no real areas of concern as it related to SCAD. I think we're all looking to develop the canal area in a way that provides the most public benefit. And so we are of the opinion that our petition here, and part of to address your concern, Ms. Bowles, as it relates to the outreach, is that this is an amendment to an approved general development plan, which does not have the same level of outreach to neighborhoods as a rezoning would. What we did, and we went on our own accord to go meet with the groups, even if it's not actually required by city ordinance, because frankly, and I'll sound like I'm repeating myself here, frankly, we just view this plan as being such an improvement as to what could be built right now that we thought it was a no-brainer. We understood that there was some confusion. We hope we've clarified it as it related to access, but we view the benefits of this site as far outweighing kind of any of the impacts. We know it would be developed as multifamily housing, but without SCAD oversight. We know it could be developed with a lot more units, with a lot more cars parked on site. And so everything that we've come to the table with today, we're trying to bring it down, to bring down the height, to bring down the unit count, to bring down the traffic concerns. And so I could take some of the blame for that if there wasn't enough outreach, but we were very confident in this project because we just thought it checked every single box for this area.
Yeah, I think my only concern is that it might be a no-brainer for the petitioner. And it may be a no-brainer to those who are in this field, but for those who live in the community who are paying taxes, they're going to want to know that the money that the city is using to improve Lewisville Road and the canal and all of that is also a benefit. It's not just a benefit for SCAD, right? Because that Lewisville Road could have been improved before this development.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
What I just wanted to make sure that the community is aware.
Yes, ma'am.
That we're bringing into awareness their concerns.
And part of the outreach, and we haven't discussed it yet, part of the outreach and the benefit, we talked about the $1.5 million improvements, about the environmental. Part of it also, and what's necessitated this amendment, if you can see this area at the top corner, through consultation with City of Savannah stormwater engineers, it's been determined that the city would like to acquire that portion of this property to increase the conveyance within the Springfield Canal. This obviously greatly benefits the entire community at large if we can start getting more stormwater and having a higher capacity in this area. Like you said, not something that we talk about and that people readily understand, but I think everyone on this board can understand that widening the canal greatly improves the stormwater capacity for this entire area, even if it's bigger than what we can see on this overlay.
I may have missed it. Did you say that you were donating that section or the city was purchasing it?
That's part of the development agreement that we're negotiating. He
said part of the development agreement.
Can you directly repeat that so it makes sure, because technically we should have had him come speak, but since you're the representative, can you just reiterate?
That is part of the development agreement being negotiated with the city of Savannah, is for that portion of the property at the northeast corner to be dedicated for stormwater.
Thank you, Mr. Yeller. And I'll just say one last thing for the record. You guys have clearly stated that SCAD is willing to work with the city on, well, support. And I just want to I know it's a highly political situation, but I really, really want to drive home the importance of being very collaborative in this effort to make sure that it does indeed benefit all parties and something strong can actually happen right there. Like I'm just encouraging high participation opposed to minimal and saying, okay, we've taken it and we've given an inch.
Yes.
And I mean that on both sides of the fence. Like I don't care. I mean, hey, I really want to encourage some true participation because quite frankly, that is what the contention that happens. And that is the contention that the community pushes forward. It's imperative that the community see SCAD and the city playing well together in the sandbox.
Yes, sir. Yes.
I just wanted to state that for the record.
Yes.
Anything else for the petitioner?
Yeah.
No, we got to do public. Thank you, Mr. Yeller.
You
have one more? Miss.
I apologize. Sure. I just took a quick look. If I'm not mistaken, the community outreach was that exact same paragraph from your last application? So I thought we had requested some additional outreach.
I don't believe that was a request from the prior meeting. This item was not continued for us to go out and have outreach. I think we had the conversation about the access and where the pedestrian access would be located. And that led to a vote that we want to clarify at this meeting, that the access has remained unchanged. But I don't believe there was any directive because we were not even sure if we were coming back.
I'm just looking at the agenda. I didn't check the minutes, so I'll take your word on that.
Ms. Jarrett, you have something else?
I'm pretty sure there was discussion about why weren't the community members involved in the discussions as opposed to the leaders. Why wasn't there a community meeting?
The outreach that we had done was still above and beyond what was required under the ordinance.
No, I'm going to come back.
Above and beyond.
Okay. The minimum that I would that's why I mentioned the canal district plan, because I know that I read it, right? And it says that you have to meet with the Westside Neighborhood Advisory Council. That I did not see that on the list, right? So that wasn't the minimum. What you did was not the minimum.
And I'm not aware of the Westside Neighborhood Advisory Council.
I raised that at the last meeting. So, and your response was we went above and beyond. So that wasn't the minimum.
Well, I mean, I will say for our defense, the Canal District Master Plan is true. It's a hypothetical master plan. It is not the ordinance that is binding on the development plan that comes forward for this body to review. And so we did, when I'm saying that we met the requirements of the ordinance, we met the requirements of the zoning ordinance that governs the review of this petition.
Okay.
Mr. Melder.
Just clarified, the canal district plan has yet to be adopted by council.
Gotcha. Thank you. All right. If there is nothing else for the petitioner, we'll now entertain the public comment. Thank you, Mr. Yeller.
Thank you.
And that is a Mr. James. Please forgive me if I mess your last name up. Is it Hans Rucker? All right. Thank you. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes, sir.
Very good. I'll be brief. I appreciate, my name is James Hans Rucker. I live on the east side of Forsyth Park. And, I appreciate Ms. Jarrett bringing up that.
One second, Mr. Hans Rucker. Do we? Gotcha. It was picking it up pretty bad. I was trying to see what's going on. Right. And we'll see. Well, I'm not exactly sure. Mr. Hunsrucker, you can continue. I apologize. And in fact, if you want to start over so we can make sure we hear everything, that's perfectly fine.
Very good. My name is Jim Hunsrucker. I live on the east side of Forsyth Park, right close to the Chatham House and Deloitte Foundry. And this past year has been an event of a lot of SCAD buses throughout the neighborhood. And they do park on Abercorn Street, far away from that location, their locations. They're also parking in Kroger parking lot, Habersham Street. They park on the 200 block of Huntington Street across from the Chatham. So they do tend to stack their buses in different locations. So it would be beneficial for this neighborhood to either restrict it to just two buses, if that's the requirement, or the buses not be allowed to stack. They have to move on. I'm not sure how many bus routes are on my location. I counted maybe three from the drawing. So this looks to have two bus routes. And I'm not sure how many students live at Chatham Apartments, but 800 beds is quite a lot of beds. So that's about all I have to add.
Thank you, Mr. Hunsrucker. Would petitioner like to respond to public comment? Oh, well, first of all, is there any more public comment? None online? And none here. Okay. Mr. Yellen.
And I was just confirming with the SCAD representatives here that for this site, as we've currently designed it with the bus pull-in, that our 100% goal, this is obviously very different than Abercorn Street, which has the existing on-street parking where spaces are available. Here, if these buses are in Louisville Road, they are blocking traffic, and we are 100% committed to having staff out there to ensure that there are only the two buses within the two bus stalls and that there are no buses waiting to queue up behind them. So yeah. We can commit to coordinating that.
Okay, cool. I think that was his biggest concern is if they get delayed, those two buses, where are they queuing? Because they will queue, but the question is where.
Correct. And so what we had shown previously okay. is that there's that turnaround further down Louisville.
You mean down at the film building?
Yes, okay. And they can queue there.
Okay. All right. If there is nothing further, we'll close the floor from the public and we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
I'd like to move that we approve staff's recommendation for approval of this item.
Second.
So we got a motion on the floor made by Mr. Melder and seconded by Mr. Welch. Is there any discussion on the motion? And that motion is to approve staff's recommendation. Okay. If there's no discussion, we'll enter a vote. Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwoody?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Amick?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. Motion carries and the project is approved. Thank you all. All right. We'll move to the next item on the agenda. That is New Hampstead Plan Unit Development. PUD, a text and master plan amendment. That petition number is 23-004-262-ZA. Mr. Morrow.
That's blank. My apologies, Mr. Chair. The first link was blank.
No worries. That gives them an opportunity, everything to settle too, so no worries.
Okay. Sorry about that. I guess I just didn't give enough time to load. Again, this is Edward Morrow, Development Services staff here at the MPC. Mr. Chair, members of the commission, the present request is for an amendment to the New Hampstead Planned Unit Development Master Plan. Sorry, I'm distracted because for some reason I can't make this. Hopefully we get to the point. I'll just put that there. This is a request to amend the New Hampstead Planned Unit Development. So again, just for reference, the New Hampstead PUD is a rather thick document that was originally adopted back in 2006. And the way that the text is written, it is referenced as a section of the City of Savannah zoning ordinance. So again, typically these are standalone documents that guide the development on any particular site. But as you can see, it's a fairly lengthy document, and staff report only includes references to those sections that are actually being requested to be amended. Something very similar came through most recently back in 2018, at which time, notably, 863.26 acres of land were put into conservation. And so at present on the screen, you can see those areas indicated in green were those that were designated as nature preserve as part of the master plan. And this is the master plan that is part of the current amendment. So you're seeing what is requested to be approved right now. And that remains part of that. I'm noting that because at that time, the net density for this particular PUD went down from the originally approved density of 11,275 units to 9,819 units. And so the present request, the first thing I'll note is that the request is to bring that net density back up to 11,275 units. That's 1,456 in particular. And so the bulk of the requested amendments to the PUD text are for the purpose of densifying what is already there. Within, the say 2,000 acres that are affected by this request, the idea is that single family lot size, just to kind of summarize the changes that are requested, single family lot sizes would be reduced and density would be increased from 4 units to 5 per acre. For a single family attached, those lot widths also would be reduced, and the minimum required lot area would also be reduced, and the density would be increased from 8 units to 10 per acre. And multifamily units, those would be increased in density from 12 units per acre to 15. Just to kind of summarize the bulk of the request, they are attempting to find ways in the undeveloped parcels in order to increase the maximum permissible density and get back those 1,400 units. Also of note here, there was one particular parcel that was originally designated as single family. In the previous request to amend the master plan, that particular parcel was requested to be converted for institutional use. So in 2006, this was intended to be a single family parcel. 2018, City Council agreed to convert it for institutional use. And then at present, the petitioner is requesting that that be designated for multifamily use. So just kind of a correction to something that I said in pre-meeting, that this was previously single family. It is gone to institutional and is now requested to go to multifamily. So at one time it was indicated for residential use, just single family. In essence, they're looking to increase densities, reduce minimum lot sizes, and to raise the height of structures, both residential and commercial. And so in summarizing those, that constitutes the bulk of the changes that are requested. Staff, in the course of reviewing this, has received some feedback from the community and those who are affected by this proposed amendment to the PUD. And staff will note that the majority of those complaints have been regarding building quality and impacts to the roadways with regard to the proposed construction that is to take place. So we have received community community feedback with those with regard to those concerns, but those are not necessarily things that are relevant to the use. Again, the use is well established, and these are just changes to how it is that these particular parcels will be developed. Again, this is not to say that that increased densification does not have impact on the infrastructure, but again, within the scope of this review was just the appropriateness of the use. I would encourage perhaps some discussion on timing and phasing, as has been the case with several recent residential developments. If we are increasing density, obviously there are associated impacts. But again, these are requested amendments to something that is already in place and has been adopted. With that, staff does recommend approval of the requested amendments to the New Hampstead Plan Unit Development, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Any questions for staff? All right, hearing none, we'll be hearing from the petitioner, if you'd like.
My name is Rob Brannon. I'm an attorney with Bowen Fallagant. I represent the petitioner, Jeff Coggan, who is here with me today, and also Julia Rich from my office is here. I've been involved with this property since International Paper annexed it in 2004, and we got the PUD amendment approved in 2005 with 11,275 units. The entire project was master planned at that time for that many units, including the roadways. We have two-lane roadways out there now, but there's enough room to make them four-lane roadways. You can see along Little Neck Road and 204, we reserved 100 feet of right-of-way to widen those roadways also. And we're currently in the final stages of a regional traffic study to determine what kind of traffic calming devices will be needed out there, such as traffic lights and traffic circles and that kind of thing, so that we can provide for that. In 2016, my client purchased it, and we put 863 acres into a conservation easement that decreased the density, and that property was donated to the city for a park. And so we've been about 2,000 below what this was master planned for since that time. We're currently doing a couple of things with the city as far as planning going forward. We have conversations with them about donating a fire station site that's going to be 37 acres. So we're in the final stages of that. And that site's designed, in addition to the fire station, have some, an area for affordable housing so that the city can do an affordable housing project there. We're also working on annexing some property, this piece up here. That'll go to the legislature for annexation next year. And is intended to be used for some workforce housing. So as you know, there's a big housing shortage at this time. So a lot of this is just designed to get our density up to what we need to satisfy some of that housing shortage. And I think that's mostly it. I think Ed took you through the changes, but just to kind of show you on the paper here, this is I-7, which is being changed to multifamily. Are you able to see my arrow on there?
Yes, sir, we can.
Okay. And then this parcel is the one that is being converted to a village designation, which will give us a little more residential. That was a commercial parcel before. This is the parcel that we're conveying to the city for the fire station site and the affordable housing site. We're talking about increasing the density. Just so you understand the way the PUD works is when somebody brings us a project, we approve the site plan and the development plan, so they don't get to build to whatever density they want. We have a chance to look at the project and approve it or not approve it. So there's a lot of oversight in how we use these densities. And I think part of some of the lower numbers, I know that you had some concerns about as far as lot widths and things like that, related to being able to allow us to have affordable housing projects and workforce housing projects out there on the site. Let's see, we got. There are two types of neighborhoods, residential neighborhoods, a conventional neighborhood, which has the regular 40-foot lots, and then what we call a traditional neighborhood, which is more of a cottage neighborhood, where we have smaller projects, and that's where we would see the smaller lots, the 30-foot lots. The properties that this would apply to are these properties in yellow. Those are the ones we still own that we would be changing to residential. The ones in peach are the multifamily sites that we still own, where we would be increasing the density slightly. I've got Jeff Coggin here, and I wanted to let Jeff just talk about the market a little bit and why we think this is necessary.
I'm Jeff Coggin, and I head up Preserve South Holdings and also Argent Land Holdings, and I represent the developer and declarant for New Hampstead. And to follow up on what Rob was talking about, the increase in densities are very critical for us right now. We have a very critical housing shortage out on the I-16 corridor, and with the recent announcement of Hyundai and all the employment coming in, both direct and ancillary, is going to be very substantial. And right now, the only solution for the next probably 5 years with a PUD of this size that has water and sewer is New Hampstead. And, you know, when we talk about taking the densities back up from 9,814 units to 12,000, I think five or whatever it may be, we're not going to achieve that number. The more critical number right now is going to be density per upland acre. The PUD document is very dated, as you well know. It was originally done in 2006. It's dated. It's not in keeping with the modern development world in terms of densities, ridge heights, setbacks. Things have changed a lot in the last 15 years. So we're kind of bringing it into the modern world. There is another major impact at New Hampstead, and what happened in 2016 prior to our acquisition of the property is that the wetlands delineation for the balance of the project, that wetlands permit expired. Which is, and that should not have been allowed to happen, but that was just prior to our acquisition. What we're finding out now as we go and delineate parcel by parcel, wetlands are expanded as much as 20% or more. So we're going to lose density. And what we can't afford to do is lose density from 9,814 down to, let's say, 8,000 units. So we've had the more important number here is the density per upland acre. Because we will not achieve a yield of 11,250. That is a byproduct of the computation on the index chart, which was the maximum allowable by upland acre by parcel. So I just wanted to define that very clearly. This is firsthand experience. We've also done a preliminary wetland study, and even with the recent new interpretation by the Supreme Court, which has got more liberal interpretation of wetlands delineations, we've still got an issue. And so we are going to lose significant housing there. A few more things that are important, too, is that we voluntarily want to incorporate workforce housing and affordable housing into New Hampstead. It wasn't a requirement. It was not mandated. It's not involved in an inclusionary overlay, but we see a critical need for it, particularly with Hyundai coming in to, producing cars in early 2025. We have at least three different sites that we are concentrating on. So when you start looking in terms of the density, the setbacks, and those type things, those are also going to be utilized for affordable housing, probably in the 60% AMI range, and we're going to be looking at workforce housing at a blended rate of 80, 100, 120%. We're donating a $3 million, on top of 935 acres of green space we've already donated to the city for $1 love and affection, which will soon be a passive park for the city of Savannah. We have also, we're donating about a $3 million piece of property, which is in process right now, which is 37 acres. We're donating for a city complex, fire, EMS, police, and so forth. And we're working with the city to basically incorporate an affordable housing component on that property. We think that's critical. We also, as Rob stated, we are annexing a piece of property. It was actually a part, it's in Bloomingdale, but was considered part of New Hampstead, parcel 13A. But it's in Bloomingdale. So to get water and sewer and bring it into New Hampstead, we are working on an annexation. that that site is going to be designated strictly for workforce housing and affordable housing. Again, with very easy access from John Carter Road to I-16 and to employment. So these are some of the things that we've done. And as you well know, there is a cost to workforce housing and affordable housing. And the developer can absorb as much as we possibly can. But there, as you well know right now, with concerns to city ordinances, there are very few concessions available. So density is really one of the very few offsets that we have to absorb this level of workforce housing and affordable housing. With concern to some of the other things, I think they're incidental. Ridge heights at 38 feet. Everywhere else in the world is 38 feet or 42. Setbacks, we're talking about primarily traditional neighborhood design. We've got projects from Virginia down through Alabama in the coastal region right now, and we build million-dollar homes with 10-foot front setbacks and 5-foot rear setbacks right now, and that's traditional neighborhood design. Again, we're trying to bring New Hampshire into the modern world. It's a very, very dated document. Other than that, you know, if I can answer any specific questions that you might have with me, I'd be glad to.
Thank you, sir. I have a couple of questions. Well, I want to leave with this. I know that you're just kind of giving us a run on the portfolio and what you guys are capable of doing on some of these lots. I don't think you want to leave with million-dollar homes, because that is an issue that we are having, making houses where people can actually afford them. And I don't know a whole lot of Savannah residents that can afford a $1 million home with the rates that people are earning, wages that they're earning. So little note for yourself, put the feather in your cap. Like, that's not what we're trying to say.
We're trying to keep housing as affordable as possible.
But don't leave a million.
And what we do as a company is that we have to adjust our market demand.
Gotcha.
And, so we're going to make it as affordable as we possibly can.
Okay.
$1 million homes, I doubt seriously you'll ever see that at New Hampstead. That is in a very different market in Virginia.
Good to know.
Okay.
Of those 30 foot width lots, what's the depth?
What's that, sir?
Mr. Brandon mentioned a 30 foot wide lot that you guys were looking at from increasing the density. What does that depth look like?
You're looking at probably the most you could probably get would be in the range, and that's detached. You might get 6 units an acre in that range if you're lucky.
No, I'm saying what's the depth of the lot? If you got a 30 foot lot, how deep is
typically
that?
Typically 90 to 100.
90 to 100.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And you said those are single family detached, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And those dimensions are primarily utilized for a traditional neighborhood and affordable housing and workforce housing only.
It's a narrow house. That's why I was asking.
Not in the conventional neighborhoods out there at all.
Yeah, because that's going to drop you down to a 20-foot. If you got a 5-foot on either side, you got a 20-foot frontage of that house. That's a narrow, deep house. So I just wanted to be clear and let the board know and let the board be clear on what that's going to even look like. And I raised that question primarily because I know that there are quite a few developers in town that are hoping and trying to figure out how to use a 30-foot wide lot.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of been deemed substandard because trying to accommodate that type of program in that width is very challenging.
It's very challenging.
So I wanted everybody to kind of be clear on what that even looks like and kind of number one, see what the feasibility is here, but also if it is something that's successful, it's something that could potentially be explored throughout where there are other 30-foot lots with the 5-foot setbacks that reduces you down to a 20-foot frontage. But that's all I have.
Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I just have a comment to go off of what you just said. Most lots in the downtown area, in the wards, they are 30-foot lots.
Okay.
But most of them are 100 foot in depth with a lane, and they also, to my knowledge, have zero side yard setbacks.
Correct.
Many of them. So it's a totally different product than what we're probably accustomed to around Chatham County.
And that's really my point, because I'm not talking downtown. This is a space that I deal in. I've had clients that have come to me with 30-foot wide lots, and I'm like, you, it's a trick. And if we are even able to do anything, which it typically, you know, results in some consolidation of lots or something else, a combination of lots or something, because you might not have that 100-foot depth and you most certainly don't have that lack of 5-foot setback on side yard. So I want to make sure I put this in, you know, put this on the table for us to kind of think and mull through. Ms. Emick.
Yes.
Can I respond to that?
Just yeah, let me respond.
I apologize.
Mr. Brannon, go ahead.
I was just going to remind the commission, though, that this is a PUD, so people just don't have permission to go build houses right on 30-foot lots. They have to bring a site plan to us. They have to show us the elevations. We have to be able to look at it and know that it'll work in the development and that it won't be a hindrance.
Yeah, 100%. So
we do have some
agree.
Approval rights over those lots. It just gives us the ability to do that where it works.
100% agree, but I think it was worth prompting so that the conversation can start so we understand what that looks like, because when they come back after for a master plan of a given plot or a given parcel, that's something that we need to be considering. And I just wanted to make sure that that was already on y'all's mind, because y'all know and y'all are fully aware that it is going to be raised. But in addition, make sure that the body itself is thinking about it as we move forward before we see what could potentially come from this PUD. Ms. Emick.
Tell me about the garages.
The garage is right on specific.
On these 30-foot wide lots.
Typically, this is going to be rear load, rear alley.
Two-car garages?
You typically would have one in, one out on a 30-foot. It would be very difficult. I don't know yet. You could have two, possibly, but it's unlikely. It's mostly going to be a single garage.
So the design here is going to be the rear load with the lane.
Correct. That's the only way you can do a 30-foot lot. It's hard to do front load on 30-foot. Otherwise, all you got is just a garage.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, one other thing. What you keep mentioning, workforce and affordable housing, what does that look like?
In terms of AMI?
Everything.
American mean area mean income. The way we define it and the way municipalities define it can be different. What we're trying to do is come to an agreement with the city as to what we think it should be. And we feel like that affordable housing should be at 60% AMI. And what we do with workforce housing, and we've done in other markets, is we try to blend the rate at 80 and 100 and 120. And so that you average 100% AMI, but you still have some 80 in there for workforce housing. So it makes some a little bit more affordable there. But when you get down to the 60% AMI, that typically has to have concessions and subsidization. It's a little different because it's not feasible, quite frankly.
Thank you. Ms. Jarrett.
Ms. Emick, had part of the question that I had was, you know, how do you define affordable and workforce housing? And I think you answered that. I do have to say that I have a 30-foot lot that's 120 feet deep, and I have a 2,500-square-foot house and a 500-square-foot carriage house on that lot. And they're not exactly affordable housing, but you know, you can get a lot. You just don't have a lot of yard. So it's perfect for somebody who doesn't want a lot of yard to maintain. But, you know, anyway, the other thing I wanted to say, beat the drum I always beat, is road connectivity. I see you have a dashed road between John Carter and Highgate Boulevard.
That is correct. Yes, ma'am.
My feeling is the more connections you can make, the easier it's going to be. We've got problems over between Richmond Hill and Savannah where people can't get back and forth because there aren't enough through roads.
Well, we are. That road is going in. It's about 5,000 linear feet. And when we open it up, that property will be opened into probably four, possibly up to six different neighborhoods. So that's fine roads going in. It's probably a $6 or $7 million road. But what we're doing is you got to remember, New Hampstead is not like it's a 3-year project. It's probably a 15-year project. So all of this impact is not going to be felt at one time.
I understand.
But that road does exist. We've already got an easement.
It's fine, you're great, but having the arms and legs with hands holding and feet touching is a good idea too. So
yes. And you know, Ms. Jarrett, one thing that we're trying to do out at New Hampstead is we're trying to cluster our densities in and around the commercial and school areas so it's pedestrian friendly. Good. And we can get kids to school on bikes, walking, so forth. And one thing, too, is that we're doing, we're putting in 8-foot pedestrian paths, the full length of Highgate Boulevard from one end to the other. And we've already constructed a lot of that. But each developer, as they develop, they have to put in their frontage, that full frontage of that pedestrian path. So you're going to have, I don't know how many miles Highgate is. It's got to be 3 miles or more. So you're going to have 6 miles pedestrian paths that will actually connect into the inner neighborhoods.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else for the petition?
Yeah, I have a question. Back to parking. I'm familiar with out in Pooler, Port Wentworth, where the lots are very narrow and they have 2-car garages, and that's not even enough, and short driveways because of density is not even enough. So there's tremendous amount of front street parking. Yeah. I hear you talk about the back load, but these are going to be just 2-lane streets. So how – there's not going to be enough parking when you've got a family with 2 kids and 3 cars. There's not going to be enough parking in the back. So how are you going to prevent parking on the front?
And 2 things. You will have probably in T&D, it's very typical that you would have some street side parking or curbside parking in T&D. That's not uncommon, and the roads are constructed for that. You will have, and when you get down to 30-foot lots, remember, you're not going in and putting in 330-foot lots. You have 30, 40, 50, 50-foot lots and different, you know, combinations thereof. It's not like you're going in and doing a whole neighborhood of 30-foot lots. You are not. But for 30-foot, typically in T&D, it almost dictates you have rear entry, which gets the cars, with exception to visitation, it gets the cars off the road. Mm-hmm. Because you'll have room in the back for at least 2 cars, one in and one out, possibly even 2 out, depending on, you know, what the product design is.
So are you saying then the plan that you're going to have for these communities will be more than just 2 lanes on the front? There will be additional space for street parking.
You have to. You literally have to make provision for street side parking.
Thank you.
And one thing, too, what we do is that we have a very stringent DRB ARB at New Hampstead. And I think Mr. Stevens knows that what we do is we put them through a very stringent review process before we let them submit to MPC for approval. So it goes through us, and then it goes to you guys for approval. So every single community out there will have to be approved by you and our DRB.
Thank you. Anything else for the petitioner? We appreciate it. We'll now entertain public comment. Do we have any online first?
There are like 3 persons raising their hands. The first one is Leslie Pickett.
Leslie Pickett, you said?
Yeah. So I'm gonna unmute.
One second. Okay. Miss Pickett, oh, you said Leslie?
Leslie
Pickett, if you would unmute yourself and state your name for the record, you have 3 minutes. And I know Leslie, the name Leslie can go either way. If you are male, I apologize. Okay.
There's Carrie Biber and...
Say Carrie Viper? Bieber. Okay. Carrie Bieber? If you would.
I'm here.
Okay. If you would state your name for the record, and I'm going to ask that everybody in the hearing room, please stay quiet because it is a little difficult to hear. And I want to make sure that the comment submitted is afforded the proper opportunity to be heard. Ms. Bieber, if you would, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Carrie Bieber, and I appreciate you all letting me have the opportunity to speak on this. I do hope that my public comments were received as well. I appreciate being able to listen to the questions being posed to the developer and the answers that the developer is giving back to the MPC members. I am disappointed that the public has not had that same opportunity. We have a lot of questions. There are a lot of households out here that are already established. And we would have liked to have had the opportunity to ask questions, to find out how it's going to impact our neighborhoods, what we might be able to do to help facilitate some of the positive changes that will take place in our area, and to know what to expect and to be afforded consideration for our feedback for the plans that are going in. This is not a housing development that is taking place in the middle of other housing developments. This is several hundreds of acres of land that are in the middle and surrounded by residents that already live in the area. Infrastructure. It is not in place. I understand there's a build-out process. It won't be done overnight. But I also understand and see on a daily basis all of the development that's going on now and the negative impact it's having on our road systems and in our neighborhoods. In 2018, this was in front of the city council, and I'm going to read what Mayor DeLoach, his comments from the minutes from the 12/20/2018 city council meeting.
Ms. Bieber, about the Hempstead PUD. Before you start reading, I just want to give you a time check and let you know how much time you have left. So if you would, please be judicious and try to come to a conclusion. I'll allow for you to read it, and once you finish reading it, I'll allow for you to add one more comment based off of what you read, and I'm going to ask that you wrap so we can get the rest of the public speakers. Is that fair?
That's fair. I only have about five sentences to read, so.
Sounds good.
Mayor DeLoach said, I need for everybody who is dealing with New Hempstead to recognize that we will have an issue that's going to cause a lot of problems in the future if we don't get in position of having decent roads and decent exits and so forth in that area. So in the future, when folks move up there, we want it to be an easier way for them to get around than what we do now. Right now, we have substandard roads serving brand new properties, and that will not work long term. Since his quote in December of 2018, nothing out here has been changed with the infrastructure. It is declining greatly, and these needs need to be met before more ground is broken out here. I thank you very much for allowing me to comment.
Absolutely. Thank you for your submitting. We have one more.
Leslie has raised her hand again, and she has joined through another forum. So I will just unmute her again.
Okay, Leslie Pickett, if you would, you are being unmuted on this end. We ask that you ensure that you're unmuted on your end so that you still have the opportunity to submit comment. Again, we ask that you state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I had some technical difficulties the first time that you called on. I submitted a letter of comments, but I did it extremely late, and so I'm going to.
We can barely hear you. So if you, I don't know what your microphone situation is. If you can bring your phone closer or grab your microphone closer, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
A lot better now.
Okay. I submitted some written comments late today, so I'm going to just first read those, and then since listening to the presentation, I just have a few other comments to make. My name is Leslie Pickett Sheehan, and I'm a retired attorney and resident of the Cypress Creek Cypress Creek development on Little Neck Road. Cypress Creek is a single family residential development and homeowners association composed of 23 homes and or lots. Phase one includes all homes and lots fronting Little Neck Road, and phase two includes two homes fronting Little Neck Road and Bald Cypress Lane, and the remaining 11 home sites and HOA-owned acreage is on Bald Cypress Lane. Phase two is gated, and phase one has direct access to Little Neck Road. each of the 23 lots in Cypress Creek range from 3 to 8 or more acres, with market values of $500,000 plus to $1.5 million plus. In addition to all of the objections graciously and accurately raised by Ms. Carrie Bieber, just who was speaking previously to me, and in her written comments with regard to the improper notice and ineffectual notice for this that was put, done by the developer, the residents of Cypress Creek Homeowners Association also object to the application of New Hampstead Holdings to amend the text and master plan of the New Hampstead Plan Unit Development, specifically to allow sections on the old plan, I-4 and I-5 and MS-3, to be changed to, on their new plan, what is noted as Section C-7A, with the proposed use being an affordable housing project owned and run by the City of Savannah. Proposed Section C-7A directly abuts our residents' homes in both Phase 1 and Phase 2, and if allowed to proceed, will drastically lower all residents' property values as well as our safety and rights of quiet enjoyment. Each of our property owners sought out this location and development because of its rural location and ability to own acreage and high-value homes amongst a community of like-minded homeowners within 15 to 20 minutes of downtown Savannah. Our community was developed in the mid to late 90s by Gerald Kramer to be an enclave of high-end residential properties. New Hampstead was originally planned to be a large development of upper mid to high-end single-family homes with an architecturally charming village at its entrance. Yes, sir.
Ms. Pickett, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. Can you wrap it? It's about, you've actually run a little over, but if can you wrap it in about 30 seconds?
I can wrap it if, in fact, you've been given a copy of my letter. So I don't need to read this. The point being,
did we receive, Mr. Morrow, did we receive a letter? Okay, so we don't currently have record. Well, staff is in receipt of your letter. However, the board does not currently have copy of that letter because it was apparently sent after the meeting had begun. But staff would ensure that the board gets a copy of your letter.
Mr. Chairman, actually, we just got it during this meeting. So I will send it to staff and have them print a copy out for you all to get.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we will have a copy of your letter.
Okay, that's great. Now, in regards to the comments that were made.
You got a strong 30 seconds.
Okay. I was at the last meeting, MPC meeting, when they changed the density due to the donation of the conservation, 800 plus acres conservation. At that point, it was allowed to go down to 9,000 because they'd given up over 800 acres. Now they want to come back to you and say, well, we want to go back up to the density level, but we're not giving you back, the 800 acres. The types of homes they're putting in, they want to be allowed to put in now, aren't what we all agreed to as a community and as the MPC initially.
Pickett, that's your time. That's your time. I apologize, but I want to be fair about the time that's issued. And the time limit is clearly stated. So I appreciate you submitting your comment. Again, staff has reiterated that they will provide the board with your letter, and we will all take that into account.
Certainly hope you will not allow affordable.
Thank you.
There is another person, Cheryl Senderlin is the name. I'm going to
her. Cheryl
Senderlin.
Senderlin?
Mm-hmm.
Chair, is there any way to get the volume increased? It's hard to interpret exactly
difficult.
What they're saying.
No. Currently now, no.
Good afternoon.
No, not really, because it's going to be hot.
I know. We can turn it back on. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Could you please state your name for the record, and please hold to the 3 minutes allotted.
I'll do my best. Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Senderlin.
I live at 91 Ted Newton Avenue. I've lived there for 31 years. New Hampshire is next to my home. Where you see the proposed dotted road, and it says John Carter at the top, I live by the J. I'm requesting the MPC to postpone a decision on the changes to the New Hampshire petitioners requesting for two reasons. The surrounding neighbors need more notification as to these major changes that are being requested. You're getting late notices because a lot of people have not seen the sign. The signage and mailings were either minimal, did not include the existing neighbors, or placed in a manner in which they were clearly visible to the general public. Supposedly over 500 mailings went out, but no one on John Carter Road or Fort Argyle Road that I've been able to contact have received one. I live directly across from one of the signs and the new proposed entrance for the project and did not receive notice. I'm requesting that when this does go before the board, that the impact these density increases will have on the surrounding area be strongly considered. In 2005, the New Hampshire Development received uses and development standards that would not otherwise be allowed by the zoning ordinance, and now they're coming back after donating land and requesting to push what they received above and beyond others to even more. I was at the original neighborhood meeting many years ago, and they presented to us 9,000-something homes, and it was in a more upscale neighborhood-type situation. These requests will result in possibly one-fifth more homes. With this much more allowance comes more traffic, more needed infrastructure, more roofs for climate change, and possibly more flooding. The roads, the drainage systems per Chatham County, the fire services, the police, et cetera, services are not there yet. Yes, they're coming. But you can let the increased in people in. You cannot let the increased people in before the services are there to support them. Please consider postponing for the neighbors to have time to meet as well as and strongly consider the effects this huge development is already having on the 1,500 or so homes that already live in this area. This group, as well as most of you, do not live out here. For the benefit of profits and to the detriment of the existing neighbors, they want to ask for even more and pack more people in, just kind of like rats to make more money. I can give you myself to prove the detriment of all this potentially adding one-fifth more homes to the New Hampshire plan in our area. I live off John Carter Road. I look around my house each day since CETA started building, which hasn't been mentioned today. I have new cracks in my roof. My cherry hardwood floors are lifting. My yard gets flooded from runoff. My hydrostatic valve in my pool has water running back in it. And my 86-year-old dad next door has water poured in his septic tank. Then I get my car to leave. 30 seconds. I get my car to leave, and I see the industrial site 100 feet from my front door. I drive down my driveway, which is wooded, to an area that just sold 300 apartments that I must go through to get to the end of my road to face the new dotted road entrance that will allow people from New Hampshire to come in and out. Then I turn out my driveway and go to an intersection that was allowed to put a quick trip truck stop, which is a massive traffic issue, and a Shell station and a pending Parkers, all on an original small two-lane road with no traffic light. So the density already proposed by New Hampshire is enough to damage this area and should be enough to make them financially prosperous already. Adding this extra density is just numbers to the MPC board and a profit to New Hampshire, but to us, it's our existence in this area.
That's your time. We appreciate you for participating. Does that conclude everybody that's online? Thank you. Commissioner Whiteley, we know you are speaking on behalf of your constituents, so we'll give you some extra time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I appreciate that, and good afternoon to the commission. Commissioner Aaron Whiteley, representative of the 6th District of Chatham County, Southwest and South Side. So a lot of the items that were on the today's agenda, be it cobblestone, things on Bush Road and in New Hampstead, are either in my district or adjacent to my district. Three points I want to make in my comments, and I'll be as brief as possible. So one, in engaging with my constituency, one is just the notice. I wonder, and this is a question, and please let me know if this is not the correct venue. Is there an ability for this body to require two-sided signage, when it comes to the notices that are put up?
I don't necessarily know, I don't, for a requirement, but this is a venue that we could bring that up for consideration from a staff standpoint. So, I mean, the executive director can feel free to speak to it, but I would say that that's a possibility.
I was just going to say that, just the county's responsible for the signage that it provides and the city's responsible for the signage that it provides. Mm-hmm. They can require whatever signage that they would like. Our board can make a request to them that they change the size of the signs, things of that nature, based on the size of the lots.
Okay.
But this has been a discussion that has been ongoing with regards to signage for a while. So
yes,
it's
ma'am.
Not been anything new.
Hey, Mr. Miller is going to chime in on that,
yes,
too.
Sir.
Sure. It's an excellent point, and we've been actually working at the city of the staff level for some recommendations to improve our own signage ordinance and requirements, and we hope to have something to share with MPC staff in the next week or so, because we do see this issue recurring. I just want to note, as strong as we can have the strongest sign ordinance and the strongest public engagement ordinance, but you know, what happens after those signs are posted, is sometimes can be troublesome as well. So, but very good point, sir.
No, I definitely agree and understand with that. Yes, we can have the best intentions. Things brief well, but the execution often aren't the same. So that would just be a request that we look into that. And I would also echo that request to myself and my colleagues as it relates to the county and having some two-sided signage. You've heard from a lot of my constituents, and ultimately the challenge that we're facing right now is a lot of the people that you're going to hear from who are opposing this, we as county commissioners are their only local representatives. So this New Hampstead development being within the city of Savannah, this would be pretty much the only venue that we get an opportunity to express some sort of feedback, be it positive or negative. So I wanted to take that opportunity. Secondly, infrastructure. When I think about just this development, you're looking at the Little Neck Road, namely, is a road that needs a tremendous amount of work. And so here we are. We have the opportunity to kind of put the horse back in front of the cart. And so perhaps we could identify who's going to be responsible for these roadway improvements prior to the increased density, just because, you know, I understand that the growth is happening. We get it. Our biggest challenge as unincorporated citizens is that we as unincorporated citizens want to be at the table or at least have an idea, say so. If somebody was going to make a tremendous change to your area, your neighborhood, your front yard or across the street, you'd want to know about it and at least be able to say, hey, what about this? You know, chime in. So when we think about the infrastructure, the roadways, it's already a problem. Without 11,000 homes or 9,000 homes, now potentially 11,000 homes. So I just ask that we consider in some way or another to formally state or address who's going to be responsible for some of those roadway improvements. I understand for Argyle Road being a state road, it's GDOT, but Little Neck is something that we can, in the spirit of collaboration, which was something I heard stated earlier today, we could figure out together as friends and pals. The other thing is, so with that, I'll just close in saying, if we could include some sort of formal requirement as it relates to this development, and even some of the associated developments, to have a requirement of a formal requirement of some sort to, engage the community organizations. Now it was, showed to me, I've received, email correspondence that stated that, the West Chatham Community Watch, is recognized as an organization, a neighborhood organization in that area. Yes, they're not in the city of Savannah, but again, they are a representative or at least a collaborative of those unincorporated constituents. So I'm just asking, I'm here pleading with my hat in hand, let these folks be a part of the discussion, because I saw some folks laughing, but it's no laughing matter when your yard that didn't used to flood is now flooded because multiple pine trees, which I'm sure y'all know, suck up a lot of water. Well, those trees are going away, and it's creating a lot of issues for these constituents or these citizens. So I think in the spirit of responsible government or governance, it's important for us to make sure that we're hearing these comments and not laughing at them, because it's not a laughing matter. It's all fun and games until it happens to you. The second thing I would ask, just again, to identify who's responsible for the roadway improvements, and then third, to discuss in some way or another two-sided signage to make sure that the community actually has adequate involvement, and not when we talk about going above and beyond, what is that? You know, because like I go above and beyond. I tell my wife I do, but she says I don't. So what is above and beyond? You know, let's try to formalize it so that we all could be on the same page and playing by the same rules. And I think that'll make everybody's life a lot easier. Thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. White. Chairman. We appreciate you representing your constituents as well as you do.
I have a question or comment for the commissioner. The roadway has come up. Issue has come up over and over and over. And I know on the other end of Little Neck, I believe on, my mind just went blank.
17?
Where?
Keller property?
Yes, Keller property. I believe the city was somewhat involved or there was some discussion, but I think there needs to be more discussion at a higher level than this board with yourself or your staff in the city to making sure that it works for everybody. Because a lot of these roads that are city roads are dumping onto county roads, and the congestion is, that's where the congestion is. So I would hope that this would spur you and your counterparts at the county to be involved in that discussion.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that comment, Mr. Noah. And I think that we at the county, we've developed a good relationship with the folks at the city, despite what folks may think. And I think that is a conversation that has to be had with the city and the county, because annexation has led to some of these challenges to where plots of land are annexed, but the road is left to the county. And so, Wild Heron would be another example of that. And so we do need to have greater discussion on that. But with that, as you all, as the planning body of our community, I just wanted to make sure that y'all are kind of tracking that there's only so much we can do, but also you guys can help lobby to make sure that we as the county and the city are working together to figure these things out, because the growth is happening. We understand that. But again, we want to be proactive and not reactive.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. And I'll just piggyback what Mr. Noah said, and I'll double down on the comment that I made about SCAD truly collaborating and the city truly collaborating with each other. I still encourage the exact same thing. We are all being impacted daily. It's only going to get worse if we only having a conversation of collaboration and not actually collaborating. Everybody's going to suffer. Whether you think it's impacting you or not, it will in very short order. So I'm wholeheartedly behind and going to continue to push and be vocal about the need for collaboration.
Well, we appreciate collaboration. That. Absolutely. We appreciate that. Thank you.
You had something for Commissioner Whiteley?
Actually, for the petition.
We'll swing back around. Thank you. Please, just Ms. Bowles, if you would make a note of it so you don't forget, because I'm going to finish up the public comment, because we got some residents that are eagerly waiting for their opportunity. Ms. Garnasia Bogus, if you would, limit your comments to 3 minutes. I know your husband's got your back to pick up what you might not get out. So just state your name for the record.
My name is Garnasia Bogus. I live at 347 John Carter Road. Those were some of my neighbors that called in, and we appreciate the commissioner's assistance. So we understand the growth. My husband and I have already relocated from another situation in Port Wentworth. Thought we were good here. We got a nice little piece. We'll be good. But we're being impacted. The traffic and the issue is on John Carter Road, there are three different municipalities. You got Bloomingdale, you got Chatham County, and you got Savannah. How difficult do you think it is to get anything done? We have a drainage issue on John Carter Road. And from looking at this map, and I see where the wetlands is on here, as soon as they start building, our property will probably be flooding. Chatham County is currently working on a huge drainage issue project. So I would just ask that we need for people to get together and communicate, because all of us in unincorporated Chatham County, we're being affected. And guess what? We don't vote in Savannah. We don't vote in Bloomingdale. Guess how difficult that is to get something done. So somebody needs to be paying attention. And we did get our letter in the mail, my husband and I. So I don't have a problem with the grow. I know things are going to grow, but right now to get off of John Carter Road, when you get to Little Neck Road, you now have a big QT with trucks coming in and out on a 2-lane road. You got a Shell station. You got other homes and apartments being built. We got a house just got torn down on this side of the street. There's another home being torn down to put in a Parker's. And we're going to have a Kroger's, but we have a 2-lane street. I heard the gentleman say that they're going to be doing 4 lanes, but where is that 4 lanes going to come up to? Up to the Bloomingdale line? So we have an issue in unincorporated Chatham County. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bogus. Mr. Bogus.
I believe Ms. Bogus got it.
Yes. I do have a question for you.
He had a question for you.
Just for clarification, are you opposed to this density change, or are you more addressing the fact that there needs to be infrastructure improvements in tandem?
You know, we're aware of, you know, all of that property behind our property. We've had a great communication, you know, with the landowners there, so we understand growth. My issue is I think that the infrastructure, the roads, the, you know, all the things that they have to do, those need to be looked at first before we go building homes and the effect, because when there's a cause, there's an effect. And it is affecting the communities. The lady that called about her yard, I mean, we came up here before about a situation. She's going to have a plant right in her front yard. Her home is flooding. Her father can't use his restroom. That's not acceptable.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Any more questions?
And before I call the next public speaker, I just want Ms. Leslie Pickett Sheehan to know that for certain that we staff has indeed printed your email, and each commissioner is absolutely in possession of it. So they will be able to take what your thoughts were, not only from what you stated, but also what you sent into consideration before making a decision. All right. We got two people on the same card. I'll allow for both to speak if that is indeed the desire. So, Ms. LaShonda Fuller. And if you would, state your name for the record. And again, you have 3 minutes as well.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and the board. For the record, my name is LaShonda Fuller, and I represent the Hempstead Palms community. I am a homeowner as of next month. It would be my first year in the community. And with me, I have 49 other of my residents or my neighbors on this piece of paper that is opposing the increased density because, now, I'm not going to repeat what everybody said about the roads. We agree with that. But the homes are poorly constructed. The structure is... the cracks in the foundation needs amending. Siding has caps. Ductwork inhibits quality airflow. One of my neighbors, because it's just her and her daughter, they don't use a lot of water pressure. She had a lot of family come over. Whole downstairs flooded because what they discovered was that the pipes were not adequately installed and connected. A neighbor across the street from me, he's been living there shorter than I have, and his upstairs, so I hear them saying they want to build up, but his upstairs floor is cracking, and it's too, so the it's the poor quality. It's just poor quality. And then we're paying over $300,000, $400,000 for these homes, and they want to mix tax brackets. You mix tax brackets, that's going to bring our value down for our house. We're not going to have to be able to resell. People are trying to resell their homes right now, and it's hard for them. We talked about the one entry and exit pathway. The homeowners Association and the site managers. We don't even know them. They've changed, right? And when we do reach out and ask for requests, I don't get any responsiveness. I had a pre house inspection done. None of that has been sought to. I just had a 1-year warranty or a 1-year house inspection done before my warranty expires and submitted it to builder. Now, we know that the builders have changed from Beacon to DR Horton, but the reality is that if they keep using the same workers, it's going to continue to be poor homes, poorly constructed. So I have this for your minutes. It's 50 addresses, and then within our area we have a little under 150 houses already constructed. A little under 119 are filled with homeowners, and so you got some that are trying to turn over. But with that being said, we're a small community and we don't want overpopulation, and we also want our needs met. So I don't know how this can begin to offset the conversation of how do we even get our builders to respond to our requests about the issues that we have with our construction. My garage is caving in and I've only been there for 10 months. So I would appreciate some follow up.
Thank you. Now, I will state this, like, not necessarily the proper forum to address quality, because we unfortunately that we don't have control over that. However, it is a good forum to be able to get it out if you have not had the opportunity to get it out anywhere else, because as the land developers, it at least puts them on notice for understanding the developers that they do entertain to develop the property. It puts them on notice to kind of start holding some level of accountability and or going through a better vetting process in order to build out a quality home. Again, like, it's not necessarily the forum and there's nothing that we can
do. Where's the forum, sir?
That's a tough question. Miss,
if I may, and I'm hate that the county manager is not here today, or the city manager is, so if that's in the city and the buildings were built under code, then the inspections department just needs to do a better job with inspections. It's the builder's responsibility, but it's also the building inspector's responsibility to review and make sure that those items that you are having concerns about are built with code. So the city manager's here. I'm sure he's made some notes and will probably check with his staff to find out what's going on with regards to some of the construction quality out there.
Well, what we know is that the homes are being built minimum compliance. And so someone needs to come out and inspect all the houses. So who do I give this to so you can make a copy of this?
Staff handle it. And we appreciate y'all's legwork to represent your community. All right, Mr. Graham. Well, if you would, now I'll have to have you come forward and state your name for the record and all that good stuff.
Yes, my name is Floyd Graham, and I've been out there and see exactly what you just spoke about. And yes, the houses need to be inspected. Most first-time buyers, they're going to purchase a home because of cosmetics. Now, once you get in the house, that's when you see the poor quality of workmanship. But if you have a good inspection prior to selling the house, then your problem is solved. Okay, so I'm not going to take more of your 3 minutes, so that's
it. All right, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And one final speaker, Ms. Nancy Henry. Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes, ma'am.
My name is Nancy Henry, and I live at the Palms at New Hampstead. And I think part of our problem is we're very uneducated, because I didn't honestly know there even was a Metropolitan Planning Commission until I got a letter saying they wanted to do an amendment to the master plan, but it never even said what it was amending from. So until I went on the internet and started reading, you know, you don't realize, oh, now they want to put even more homes here, which I think is detrimental. Just from what I'm seeing in my own community, it started out, we didn't find out till last year, Beacon built like the first, he's building the first three phases, and then he sold the rest of it to D.R. Horton. And we only have one road, which is the one I live on, that goes in and out of the community, which I think is pretty dangerous when they're building over 600 units and have one road. And we're constantly seeing these big construction trucks going back and forth. And people are parking across the sidewalk, and they're parking on their lawns on the parkways. And we don't have these little lots. We have like normal size lots, and we're seeing that much problems in our neighborhood. That leads me to believe for people coming in the future that that would just not be a good thing. So that's why I came today to just kind of speak up for the souls that will be coming after me, that their quality of life, you know, I think it's really worth considering what, you know, when you start jamming all these people into one little spot. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. That concludes public comment. The petitioner will have the opportunity to respond.
Does the commission have any questions that they want me to respond to?
Well, I know Ms. Bowles did, and specifically, and then we'll take Ms. Jarrett.
Okay, thank you. Would you respond to the concerns about meeting with the HOA?
Yes, ma'am. We asked about whether we should meet with the HOA when we started this process, and we were told since it was a text amendment, that wasn't a requirement. My client is a master developer, so we don't build any houses. We don't develop these subdivisions. The Palms was sold to that developer before my client ever even was involved or owned the property. So, you know, we're certainly glad to meet with an HOA if they want to ask questions, but it was not a requirement of the application, so we didn't do it.
I'm glad you said. I was just getting ready to ask if you would consider that. Thank you.
Ms. Jarrett.
Then I'll reiterate what Ms. Bowles said. I was concerned too that the neighborhood didn't have an opportunity to speak. And I guess part of it is the fact that, you know, it was a question of whether it's a text amendment or, you know, a zoning amendment. And, I heard some comments about road quality. Are the roads public roads?
The roads in, let's look at.
New Hampstead.
You can see it here, yes. So the roads that we built are here. These are dedicated to the city, but they are not maintained by the city. We still maintain them.
Okay.
The roads are in good condition. We keep those roads maintained. To the extent we sell like to another neighborhood, the developer and the neighborhood themselves maintain those roads. I don't know whether they're public roads or private roads. I think they're private roads in those neighborhoods maintained by the association.
And your construction traffic, how does it route?
We don't really have construction traffic because we're not the developers. We're master developers. So we, for example, would sell this entire property to D.R. Horton.
So you don't know how the construction traffic travels in and out of the subdivision.
No, I don't know.
But there's only one way in and one way out at this point in time?
At this point, there's two ways in, one off of 204, and then the road comes down and
okay.
Stone Neck Road. And those roads were master planned for improvements. You know, they're two lane now. They're wide enough to be four lane. There was some talk about improving Little Neck Road. We reserved 100 feet along our property to widen Little Neck Road.
Okay, so you've already dedicated right away.
Yeah, we're in the final stages of a new traffic, regional traffic study. To determine what needs to be done. We've had meetings with the assistant city manager, Heath Lloyd, about road improvements. And, you know, once our traffic study is done,
but
I think it'll be easier to plan when those improvements need
understood.
To be made based
but
on.
But you are willing to meet with the Homeowners Association.
Sure.
Okay.
And I'll get to you, Ms. Norris, just a second. So considering, and I'm not a developer, but I understand development a lot. Considering that you guys are a master developer and you essentially sell or parcel out development, further development by other builders, hearing the concerns of the community as a good faith measure, because quite frankly, you guys, in order for you to move the property the way you want to move it from a development standpoint, you got to hear what the public is saying. And you guys would need to address some of the concerns in order to get what you want to even be able to get those developers. And if that is indeed the case as a good faith measure, mm-hmm. I don't want to necessarily hold you to it, but I do want to state it in a public forum that would you guys necessarily be willing to have some type of a vetting process and or a good faith effort when talking to the developers for some type of site logistics to ensure that you can manage the impact. And I don't want to handcuff you because I completely understand free enterprise, but I also want you all to be good neighbors and everybody else that comes in to be good neighbors. And this is my effort in any petition that comes here. You don't have to answer it, but I do want to put it out there and put it on the forefront, put it at the forefront of your mind and have it captured for the record that it has been brought to your presence and your attention that a good faith effort of trying to hear the public and address some of the things within reason has been presented to you.
Sure. And we have a pretty strong vetting process. You know, we typically only sell to very reputable developers. We approve their site plans and their master plans. I know Ms. Hammack was asking about parking. We don't build the houses and we don't design those, but we do approve those site plans and the way they look to make sure that they're workable. We require all of these developers to have restrictive covenants with pretty specific language for their association about maintaining things. And we also have some powers under our master declaration right. to address things if they're not being properly addressed.
Okay, so, cool. I hear you loud and clear. D.R. Horton, in most eyes, is a reputable contractor because they're massive. However, most people know they are production builds, and production builds can lack on quality sometimes because you're just getting somebody that if you can stand it up and you can drive the nail, come on out. But I just want to make sure that it's, you know, a real conscious effort to try to meet the constituents halfway as you guys are developing. It's only fair. Mr. Noah.
Just two quick questions. One is I see the two, one entrance on Little Neck, one on Fort Argyle. And I believe there's another one near the cemeteries, and I may be wrong on this, that was never opened. Is that part of the same development or not? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
What cemetery is?
It's closer to across from the campground. Is anybody familiar? Yes.
Well, no, that's not. This is way.
I know it goes all the way back. So that's not connected to this in any way. Well, that was developed at the same time. Well, with that being said, you stated that the roadways, internal roadways, were deeded to the city, but you maintain them at, just for my clarity, what level of maintenance do you repair roadways? Are you talking about cutting the grass? What do you mean by maintaining them for the city?
We maintain the right of way, all of the mowing and everything. We take care of all the
landscaping. If you would, please, just restate your answer and make sure you speak in the microphone.
So you maintain the right of way, not the roadway.
Hang on. Let him reply in the microphone so we can make sure it's recorded, and then you can proceed.
That is correct.
State your name for me one more time, please.
It's Jeff Coggins, C-O-G-G-I-N. Our responsibility is to maintain the landscape, and that's everything from the road collars all the way out.
Okay. Well, it was stated the roadway, and I thought that was a pretty good agreement if that was in place.
It is. In fact, you know, Highgate Boulevard's in mint condition, so that's not the issue. Little Neck Road's in pretty tough shape.
Okay. But you're strictly maintenance of the shoulders.
Correct, because that is a city road. One thing I'd like to do, too, sir, if I could address one thing. Quality concerns concern me, okay, very greatly. First, I've heard of this. I will give the resident my card to contact me personally, and I will get personally involved. I do have a certain amount of leverage. So I'm very, very concerned, to be honest with you. This is the first I've heard of it. but I don't want New Hampstead to have a reputation for poor construction quality. Okay.
We appreciate that.
I'll address it.
We appreciate that. Okay. Anything else for the petitioner? Mr. Melder.
Jumping back to the public engagement, you should have that meeting with the HOA or other stakeholders before this gets to City Council. If it gets approved, or I'll postpone it till it does. But that's great. Thank you.
Mr. Coles.
Along that vein, I feel like I would be more comfortable having a vote here after that meeting takes place. So would your client be open to continuing this to the October 17th meeting? Because there is murkiness between whether this is a text amendment or a map amendment. And to me, it's kind of both. And I think that that would necessitate meeting with the community.
That's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And Ms. Epstein.
I have a quick comment, I think. If with the development or the granting of a land disturbance permit for each one of these possible subdivisions or however their development, because you, once this is in place, you probably won't have to do a lot of rezoning. So that with each development that comes across, if these builders and the individual contractors can really double down and make gosh darn sure that everybody around is contacted. I know that's hard because I don't know that we have a real complete listing of HOAs available. So I don't know if there's something that you can put in your contract. I'm being a little bit pushy here, but in your contracts to make sure that when these folks start building, that even though the zoning is fine and they're within their rights to do whatever, that just the folks get in the immediate area are informed.
Before you respond, Mr. Brandon, I want us to be reminded that currently the only thing that we can ask for is what is required from an ordinance standpoint, but we can at least encourage good faith and integrity measures from the petitioners that would appease and go a little bit further than the minimum required. But I just wanted to say that so we're not seeming as if we're trying to push something that we technically cannot.
Aren't those developers coming for site plan approval now to MPC? I thought they would all be coming.
That's correct.
So you do have an opportunity when you get those site requests for site plan approval to require them to meet with the neighborhoods and whoever you wanted to at that point.
No,
I'm so sorry. I just want to interject.
Am I saying that right?
No, unfortunately, when site plans come through, there is no public notice requirement. When plats come through, there is no public notice requirement. Once you make a decision on this zoning, the next time that you'll hear something is when there is a decision related to zoning to come back here. So, okay.
Or if there's a master plan for one of the large lots and the major subdivision comes back to this body for approval. But that's why I was glad to hear you at least recommend to them that they meet with the neighborhood, because if there's any tweaks that need to be made, it needs to be made in agreement with them and the community to their overall master planning document, so that when they sell off their parcels, everybody's singing from the same songbook.
Okay. Mr. Melder.
Can I just clarify the petition that the petitioner is here for? I know there was a comment made about murkiness. What did MPC staff decide was the appropriate vehicle for this petition?
The appropriate vehicle for this petition, this petition really was a text amendment from the standpoint that you have this master document that becomes, in a sense, part of the zoning ordinance, but it's also a map amendment as well, because you've got him moving parcels kind of around with regards to changing densities, still doing more more donations, things of that nature. So it's two actions that should have taken place, because that's when the community would have been notified that there was going to be a change taking place. When this property was sold to a developer and people bought, they bought and they had the PUD document, the master map. So when you have changes, both things change. So that's what should have happened. I think that's where there was some murkiness.
Understood, but it was MPC's staff that moved this vehicle forward in the way that it's moved?
No, basically we went back and forth with city staff a lot with regards to the fact that this should have been a text amendment.
All right. Well, we can throw fruit at each other the council, after the meeting is closed. But my issue here is because we're focused on impacted residents, which is great, but want to make sure that we're also fair to petitioners and future petitioners. And my question is, did the petitioner do what was required of them in terms of public notice for whatever MPC and city staff decided was the most appropriate vehicle for this petition?
For the purposes of moving this petition forward, MPC staff ensured that signs were posted in accordance with a rezoning. So we made sure that the public was duly notified. Mailers were sent out to everyone within 300 feet of all of the affected parcels. So we treated it as though it were a rezoning.
Okay. And so the petitioner met that requirement for public engagement.
That is correct. It was okay. Communicated to the petitioner that he should have a meeting, but there is not a requirement, again, as this is an amendment. So the zoning is in place. Again, these are just amendments to what is in effect already been adopted.
Yeah.
So we treated it as though it were that package of which currently, if you were to request a PUD, you would have the text in the document both required to come in as one under that rezoning. So we treated it as though it were a rezoning.
Right. And it is a rezoning because you are changing both.
Got it. So, and that's why I'm just making sure, because it seems like that at the staff level, we decided that this was the appropriate vehicle
for the commission. Level, on the MPC side, we did. I mean, I just went ahead and we talked at length about this with Edward and said, let's just go ahead and make sure we cover our bases and advertise it because it is kind of a rezoning. It's still a PUD. It's rezoning to a PUD, but it's changing, it's moving things around within that PUD, and that consists of a rezoning. As you know, the ordinance does not require that there is a public meeting with anybody in the neighborhood. We encourage that when we meet with applicants, but it is not required.
Yes, got it. I just want to make sure that staff, MPC staff, felt that the appropriate vehicle was used for the commission, that we understood that. And that we understood that there was no public meeting required of the petitioner. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. And, you know, sounds like the commission may, you know, make you do that before we take a vote on here. But even if we do, absolutely before city council meeting, I think that's something that I know city council would require, as well. But I'm pointing it out to say that the petitioner did what was required of them, for that engagement. I want to be fair to that as well.
Excuse me, but I think they did after we reached out and spoke with them again with regards to what they needed to do. So yes, sir.
Got it. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Noah, then we'll take Ms. Amick and then Mr. Coles.
Just a comment. I totally agree with the city manager on those comments. And I think something that's come, not just this petition, but several, this development goes to the city, meets all of their guidelines for water retention, all of that list of requirements. But the people that are directly affected, if they live like Mrs. Garnasia that lives on John Carter or whoever lives in that block of land, I thought that's what was said, those are the ones that are most affected by the rear of this development. So I think we've got to get to a point where we're collaborating with each other and bringing those residents in. And like the director said, this time we erred on the side of caution and sent out more notices than were probably required. But should we not have, or if we had not done that, then they wouldn't even have known. So just...
Thank you, Mr. Noah. Well, let me get Mr. Morrow and then we jump in.
I'm sorry. To Mr. Noah's point, I just wanted to say it is interesting to me that when we get these calls about what are, in essence, drainage issues, it's curious because our engineers through our development process, obviously we have ordinances. Every development that comes in, adjoining properties and making sure that that runoff is accounted for is part of the specific development plan review. So again, it is curious that these things are coming up, but that might be something to address in a broader ordinance sense.
Right.
So it is addressed. It's not that our engineers don't pay attention to these things. They look at every development and they look at the adjoining impacts. So.
Thank you. Ms. Amick.
To clarify regarding Ms. Sheehan's letter. When you look at this map, the Cypress Creek, is it bottom right, all the yellow?
It's, I think it's back here.
You see it?
I'm not.
Hang on, I want to make sure.
I think it's right in here. And though we did rezone this parcel, we rezoned it from commercial to village. So it went from a, we're downzoning that because a village is more of a mixed use residential component with some.
So it's not, the pale yellow. That's soon to be developed.
Yeah, this property is our property to be developed. They're back down in here somewhere. And this is the property we're donating to the city. We are also not rezoning that property as part of this. The city had talked about using it for affordable housing, but the city would have to come back to you and get that rezoned in order to do that.
Is there any defined buffer between the Cypress Creek subdivision and the adjacent properties?
I think there's some built-in buffers in our PUD ordinance, but I don't know what those are off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you.
I think she's done. You got it, Mr. Coles.
I'd like to go ahead and propose a motion, if I may.
Okay.
Given that the petitioner has agreed to continuing this meeting to the October 17th meeting, I think it would be better that we go ahead and get the community meeting out of the way even before we vote, do City Council a little bit of a head start so that they know what the community feeling is before it passes this body. I therefore make the motion that we continue this until the October 17th.
Second. Yeah.
All right. So we had a motion on the floor made by Mr. Coles to continue this petition to the October 17th meeting, and that was seconded by Ms. Bowles. Any discussion on said motion? All right, hearing none, we'll enter a vote. Mr. Welch?
Yes.
Mr. Wildwood?
Yes.
Mr. Notrika?
Yes.
Mr. Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Melder?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Coles?
Yes.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Bowles?
Yes.
Ms. Amick?
Yes.
I too vote yes. So the motion carries and the petition is continue to the October 17th meeting, and we appreciate the petitioner for being amenable. All right.
Thank you.
Thank y'all. So we'll move to the next item on the regular agenda, and that concludes the regular agenda. Regular business. That concludes the regular business. So we'll move into presentations. There are none listed. In other business, we have the approval of the amended bylaws. Each of you have already received a copy of the amendment. We have had the opportunity to submit and provide plenty of feedback. So today, I am willing to hear a motion for the approval of the amendment so we can adopt them.
Coles, so moved.
Jarrett, second.
All right. Motion on the floor by Mr. Coles and second by Ms. Jarrett to approve the amended bylaws. We'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So not listed on the agenda, but as a part of other business, we have we put together a nominating committee last meeting for the nomination to determine a slate of officers for the upcoming calendar year. And we will accept those nominations from the nominating committee today. So the nominating committee chair that was you, Ms. Bowles, right? If you
yes.
would please, and staff, if you would please be ready to record said information.
I'm not sure. I should remember this. So for the nominating committee, we
recommend that we recommend Karen for president.
Chair, vice chair, treasurer, and secretary.
I'm sorry.
It's going to be chair, vice chair, secretary, and treasurer.
Chair, Karen Jarrett. Vice chair, Travis Coles. Secretary, Wayne Noah. And treasurer, Lorraine Bowles.
You said, so secretary, Noah, Bowles, treasurer, okay. Staff, do you all have that? All right.
Mr. Chairman.
At this time, we will open up the floor to receive some nominations from the floor if there are any.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Mr. Welch.
I'd like to nominate yourself, Dwayne Stevens, to another term as chairman.
Okay.
Chair, point of order. Can we do this one position at a time instead of as a slate? I believe that's the way we've done it in the past, that we would take.
We're not taking action today. We're taking action at the next meeting. Okay. Oh, so the next. So yeah, I mean, if there's any, so I follow you. So if there are any nominations from the floor, Mr. Welch has made a nomination from the floor for the chair position. Is there any other nominations for the chair from the floor? Okay. Are there any other nominations for vice chair coming from the floor? Okay. Secretary, any other nominations from the floor for secretary?
I nominate Tom Mywoody.
Okay.
To continue his term.
Wow, Woody.
Nominated you.
For secretary. You just got brought forward. And for treasurer, were there any further nominations from the floor? Okay. Hearing none. That is the slate.
I make a motion we close nominations from the floor.
Okay.
Second.
So, Mr. Noah, motion that we close the nominations from the floor. Mr. Welch seconded it. If there's no discussion on that, we'll do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So those are the nominations. I want to know what we'll do is we'll take the slate today. We'll vote at the next meeting. And then in the October 17th meeting, that is when the new executive committee will be sworn in and take their seats.
Point of order.
Yes, sir.
And if I'm incorrect, please correct me, but, the bylaws under section 6,
okay,
number 3, B, officers shall serve a portion of it reads officers shall serve for 1 year commencing October 1 and extending through September 30th. If we vote October 17th, we won't be following our bylaws.
So the 26th, we're voting on the 26th.
Yes. I thought you just said.
No, I just said we're voting on the 26th, and then we will take the seats on the first meeting of October.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. If I did speak in error, please pardon that error, but I believe I said next meeting, and then everybody will take their seats at the October 17th meeting. All right. I think I've already discussed it with everybody. I want to close for a brief executive session, really brief. We'll be out of it in a couple of minutes and we can be done. All right. So motion to go into executive session. So, yeah.
Cole's motion to return from executive session.
No, it's second.
Okay. We went into executive session to discuss personnel matters. No action was taken. So now that we are back, we will now entertain a motion to adjourn.
Cole's motion to adjourn.
All right. So move. Meeting adjourned. Thank you. Thank y'all. Have a good one.